This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, everyone. It's obvious. I'm John Verhoeven, and I was a cop back in the 80s in Sydney.
And I'm Paul Verhoeven, John's son. I'm an author, and I wrote 2 books about Dad's time as a cop.
The first 5 seasons of Loose Unit spanned my time in general duties, forensics, my time as a firefighter, and even my stint running a funeral home.
This season, we're visiting the locations of Australia's most notorious, baffling, horrific crimes, and looking at what happened there.
From Snowtown to the family. From the Morehouse murders to haunted highways. This season of Loose Units is your go-to guide to the worst crimes in Australian true crime history.
Welcome to Loose Units, The Shadow Files. Hello and welcome to Loose Units, The Shadow Files. We hope you'll forgive our weird little detour last week where we kind of took a slight left turn into me nearly being assaulted. And can I just say, Dad, people's responses to that were fantastic. We have been flooded with wonderful messages, and I really appreciate all the feedback, and I haven't heard back from the cinema yet, but I'm hoping that person gets barred for life. Anyway, If you didn't hear that episode, go back and listen. It was a really interesting one. We have been looking at the BTK killer, and if I sound a little kind of flummoxed, it's because every time Dad and I ramp into one of these big multi-part looks at serial killers, first of all, Dad used to be a cop, and so you would think he was seasoned enough to, you know, be immune to the trauma of this stuff, but he's not. And I write crime novels and talk about that stuff for a living, and I'm still upset by this. So we are going to wade headfirst, that's a weird image, into the muddy waters of the BTK killer. In our first episode, we looked at the Otero family. So those murders kicked off January 15th in 1974, and that was Joseph, Julie, Joseph II, and Josephine. So that was an entire family murdered back in 1974 by the BTK killer. Then we took a look at Catherine Bright, and that was the murder which involved the shooting of Catherine's cousin. Brother. That's right, the brother. And then we looked at Shirley Vian. That was in 1977. So we've got 74, 74, 77 in March. And now we've jumped forward from March 17th, 1977 to the end of that year. So it was December the 8th, 1977, when our next murder took place. Dad, first of all, I note a certain somber tone in your voice, more so than usual. How are you feeling about this whole BTK killer thing? Is it taking a toll on you like it is on me?
Well, we've done quite a few, horrendous. We've done some really bad stuff over the years. But for some reason, I'm really trying to analyze it. Two small anecdotal points that I would like to share with you and the listeners. Firstly, please. Christine was here sitting opposite me.
Yep.
Normally, she can. This is FYI, listeners, it's a Monday morning. Now, normally Christine would be at work, but it's a long weekend. So she's here. Mm. She's more than aware and has been present during quite a few recordings over the years. But on this particular occasion, as she said to Paul prior to going on air, that she's just walked out of our place. She's going to go and sit in a park because she just does not like this story.
Yeah,
it's terrible. And I always like to warm up, so to speak, prior to going on air, sort of get myself into the mood.
Mm-hmm.
And how I did that this morning is that I watched a very lengthy interview with one of the investigating police officers.
Oh, God.
A very, very seasoned detective. And the only thing that I'm going to say about him in this episode, because we have more episodes to come, the thing that struck me, listeners, was watching him giving evidence in court and just watching his demeanour.
Yeah.
He's got the offender that's sitting some feet from him.
Mm-hmm.
They have an overhead display, and he was talking for this particular film goes for more than 2 hours.
Oh, God.
And it's just about the Nancy Fox murder.
Did you watch it or...?
Yeah.
Because I read the bulk of his transcripts, and it's much easier to read the... Obviously read it than watch it.
Mm.
But how was it actually watching him talk on camera?
Watching the detective is distressing. He's very professional.
Yeah.
He was actually brought in to investigate this when it was a cold case.
Okay.
We don't want to give too much away
mm.
because there are all sorts of things that are going to happen over the years from this point onwards.
Yeah.
So starting with, you know, I just thought that human beings, you know, people choose their various careers. You choose to drive buses and you put up with all the shitty people on the bus and the traffic and
yeah,
just the all the dramas. You choose to do nursing and you choose to be, God forbid, a school teacher. That's one job I just could not do, seriously. No matter what your vocation or path, we come to crossroads in life, but watching this detective, he's sitting next to or opposite this person,
yeah.
And yet the offender is, his demeanour is one of, he's just unbelievably nondescript and very, very compliant and extraordinarily polite.
You've talked to criminals in court, right? You've actually sat where that detective sat. You've given testimony in court, presumably with the criminals you're talking about in the room. What's the general vibe from these people?
Well, you may recall the story where I was giving evidence about a particular offender that had kicked Christine in the stomach when she was 8 months pregnant with Anne.
Mm-hmm.
He was an escapee. And aside from that one time when he actually literally, like Superman, flew through the air of the court, lunged sort of midair towards me trying to kill me, which was extraordinary, did himself no favours, might I add. But generally speaking, most prisoners, most people in custody, if they're in the dock during court, they are compliant. And some of them are contrite. Some of them feel terrible. I mean, I just, to be sitting in a room with the victims' families.
I'm guessing there's sometimes relief to be done with the sometimes years of keeping this shit under wraps, you know?
True, true. This is a very interesting person. He's still alive and he's got children. There's an interesting little story and aside to him, maybe we'll save it. For what happens when he ultimately, what happens to his wife. It's quite, we'll save that. Paul, Nancy Fox, to quote the words of Dennis Rader, he titled this particular event Project Fox Hunt.
Oh, God.
He had names for all his projects. The reason he had names for every single project was to enable him to recall in minute detail every specific case. And doesn't that make sense? It's like having a series of books with different titles. So if he's looking on a bookshelf and he sees, for example, 10 books, each with their own title that he has named, like you with...
Oh, I see.
You called your first book Loose Units, didn't you?
Yeah.
So you know whenever it's a trigger. If you pick up or if you look down the spine of your in your bookcase and come across the words loose units,
yeah,
you can immediately sort of just travel into the realms of everything written in those pages. So every project that he had, he named.
So let me okay. Following your reasoning, it seems to me that if a serial killer is getting a rush out of these killings, and once he's had his fill, he can kind of, you know, put the brakes on, hide for a couple of years, and he collects trophies because whenever he pulls them out, he can kind of relive those things that he did. So the reason he is giving these killings such distinct branding, for lack of a better term, it means that when he conjures those memories up, he can use those labels to go through the filing cabinet in his brain and relive those things more vividly and easily, right?
Precisely.
Okay.
And Paul, this particular offender, he never had intercourse
with the victims. That struck me as very unusual.
Mm. In fact, I'm just going to take you and the listeners back to the Otero family for 30 seconds.
By all means.
And this is disgusting, disgraceful, abhorrent, ghastly and sickly, what I'm about to say, but it's something I unearthed recently, and I almost wished we'd mentioned it during our first episode.
Oh, God.
But I'm just going to set the stage here as to what sort of a person he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that he did not have intercourse with any of the victims. I have read detailed reports by psychologists, psychiatrists, criminologists as to who have interviewed Rader.
Mm-hmm.
When he took the 11-year-old girl down into the basement and he hoisted her up, while she was in the process of dying, she was, and it would have taken several minutes.
Trigger warning, I assume, like a big, big, big
major trigger warning.
Okay.
He was watching her writhing around, hanging by the neck. And he, at that point, masturbated to climax.
So he got off on their death throes, basically.
Correct. This is very important to know that he never, ever had any inclination. It's all about the power, and that's going to become fairly horrendously evident with the next victim.
He just wants to, he literally gets off on the suffering of other people. It's a real, and it seems like a game of escalation.
Although, correct. So let's just...
Nancy.
Let's just go to Nancy. So
yes.
Nancy's 25.
Okay.
She's slight.
Yeah.
Slight build.
Yeah.
She has two jobs in the local town, but there has to be a genesis, a beginning. And it comes about serendipitously for Dennis Rader.
So if he's a hunter, where was she in his sort of...
Right.
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Exactly. So he's driving along one day in his town. He sees Nancy walking along the road.
Okay.
He thinks to himself, there has to be something that sort of excites him.
Yeah.
Triggers those deep emotions, and he becomes fixated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know that there's a sort of series of phases that he and other hunters, predators, go through.
Yeah.
It's the seeing of the person. It's the stalking.
Yeah.
And he has to then get to know her. So what he does, and he's got all the time in the world. He hasn't been caught. No one's aware of his actions, who he is. His family certainly don't know.
Yeah.
His colleagues don't know. He sees her one day, once he's sort of got an eye on her, go into a particular house, and he then goes up to the letterbox. He takes the mail out. He would have taken a selection of letters to make sure it was more than one to prove simply her name.
Also, I assume to check and see that it's just her, right?
Good point.
Because if there's mail coming for a Mr. and Mrs., not that that would stop him, but it would certainly change the equation.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, and this part of the story that I'm about to divulge for me is quite terrifying.
Okay.
And that is that he actually, over the months, Paul,
yeah,
went to her places of work and he actually engaged in conversation with her.
No.
Yep. She clearly had no inkling as to the fact that she was being stalked.
Where did she work again? And he was just, she worked at a jewelry store, right?
She worked at two different places. But what he was doing, he was building up in his own mind a relationship with his victim, intended victim, because that made him feel comfortable, more attracted to the person. He felt as though that he knew them.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Mm-hmm.
And then once he'd decided, he gets his kit ready.
Yeah.
His kit being the Venetian blind cord. And he, to our knowledge, he was not armed. He knows that she's a 25-year-old, slight, attractive girl who lives on her own. And he knows so much about her, but not only does he know about her and where she lives, but when he decided on that fateful night to go into her place, he
this is on the night of the 8th, right? 8th of December.
Yeah. But he knew, this is the minute detail these people have, that the apartment next door was vacant, and that an apartment in the next sort of block that was looking down onto where he was going to gain access to her apartment was vacant. There was no one home.
Right.
Which is extraordinary planning. It's so fastidious. But then I started to think again, listeners and Paul, this morning I'm lying in bed and I'm thinking about where we live and our building, and really subconsciously we all have got so much information stored about our neighbours. If you really were to actually sit down and think about who lives in what apartment, or, you know, what windows open at night time, what plants they've got in their window, people sort of, through osmosis, we are absorbing so much information that if you really wanted to, I dare say, under the right circumstances or the wrong circumstances, any one of us could go out and commit a crime.
You could build a pretty partial, but if you're a predator, you could build a partial picture of pretty much anybody who lived near you just by being, because as a society, we live in and around other people, and you can just, you never assume that there's a monster around. So you just, you know, there's gaps in your defenses.
And, like we've said at the live shows on the balance of probabilities, there's probably one person in the audience that's potentially.
That, by the way, for those of us who didn't, for those of you who didn't attend our Adelaide show at the Rhino Room, we were talking about the Snowtown murders, right?
And the family.
The family, yeah. And you said, statistically, somebody in this room knows somebody who was involved. And while I'm here, somebody in this room is going to be involved in a murder. Mm. And let me say something. We have a weird crowd. God love them. You guys did not mind that at all. Nobody was thrown. In fact, you seemed to think it was exciting. So that was disturbing. Anyway.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So when Nancy comes home, the offender is, the first thing he does, of course, his modus operandi is to cut the phone lines.
Mm-hmm.
He then comes in through a rear window and he opened the window. I'm not sure whether he forced it. He did not break the glass. He goes inside and he lies in wait. Eventually, Nancy comes home.
Mm-hmm.
He confronts her, and she was sadly, probably out of sheer self-preservation, she was very, very compliant. And he explained to her, he didn't say he was an escapee, he didn't say he wanted the car, food, money, he just said he needed desperately to have sex with her, and very calmly, she says to him, okay, can I go to the bathroom? So she goes into the bathroom and he says to her, when you come out of the bathroom, I want you to be naked. So she's in the bathroom and then she comes out and she's undressed. Mm-hmm. And she says something quite extraordinary to him. She's very, very nervous. She's very scared.
This is, by the way, this is based on his account because
this is his account,
right? Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
There is no reason on earth to discount or disbelieve anything he said in court because
really?
He is a narcissist and he almost delights in giving incredible and minute detailed facts as to everything that happened. And one of the reasons, as we've just discussed, is that he's got such extraordinary recall, aside from the fact that these crimes are so terrible and I can't imagine any human being able to sort of wipe them from your memory.
Mm.
But he has all these objects that he keeps. So he says to her, I'm going to rape you. And then she said to him, okay, let's get this over and done with, because as soon as it's finished, I can then call the police. And she lies on her bed, he straddles her, and he strangles her. He kills her. It's at this point I'd like to say that Rader, in court, many years later, said, of all the kills, all the murders, this was essentially a perfect crime for him. The previous crimes, the victims had fought ferociously for their lives. She did not. As he was strangling her, he leant down and he whispered in her ear and he told her that she was about to die. And he was, in fact, the BTK killer. So, as he said later on, one of the most extraordinary aspects of this particular crime, and all crimes, but this one was very memorable for him, was the form of torture that he felt was most appropriate was actually letting the victim know that they were being killed by a very notorious and as yet uncaught killer. Just to
that in mind, the best way to issue a declarative fuck you to the person who was about to kill you would be to say, sorry, who? I mean, if a person is getting off on the name recognition, this whole thing, Dad, this is...
It's depressing, isn't it?
Very depressing, yeah.
And then he ties her legs... he didn't use the cord on this occasion. He used some of her clothing. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, if you can use that word, he tied her up hands and feet post-mortem. Mm-hmm. He'd already killed her. He then gets her, what he thinks is her nightie, and he masturbates and climaxes over that particular garment and leaves it next to her body. He then goes through her personal belongings and he takes a lot of her clothing. He takes negligees, dresses, panties, bras. And there's a reason he takes all that stuff, Paul. Not just as...
trophies.
As trophies.
Yeah.
But also, I'm not sure whether we should mention what he does with the items at this stage or maybe save it. But he, let's just say that he has a use for these items.
Okay.
He then... Now, he never parks his car close by. In this particular case, his car is parked three blocks away. He casually leaves the scene. She's deceased. And then the next morning,
yeah,
he goes to a public telephone box in the same town. He calls 911.
Yep.
And he says to them, there is a body, and he gives the address as 843 South Pershing Street. And he says it's a homicide. He even gives the name of the victim. I have listened to that recording a few times, as did, you can imagine, the police listened to it probably hundreds of times.
Yeah.
The police immediately dispatch a number of police officers to the telephone booth. They arrive at the telephone booth within minutes of the caller making the call. The receiver is dangling. Now, like we've discussed in the past, if you're not on record, you can have the best fingerprints in the world. Clearly, they would have dusted the handpiece.
Yeah.
The whole area. They've got a recording of the actual offender's... Well, they can assume that it's the offender's voice,
mm-hmm,
telling them that, you know, a terrible crime's been committed. And it's kind of a bit unusual that he does that. And then Paul... Something quite mysterious and bizarre happens, and that is that for the next 8 years, he goes underground.
Actually, before that, so the murder happened late. The murder happened in December of 77. Early 78, Rader is still trying to kind of fish for attention, so he sends a postcard to the local newspaper, the Wichita Eagle. And it has a poem on it, this weird poem. And then he sends a letter, that one people pay attention to. And in that letter, he claims full responsibility for the killing of the Otero family, for Shirley, for Nancy, and a seventh victim who we now assume to be Catherine. But he also starts kind of laying out potential names that he'd like to be referred to. And one of them is BTK.
Yep.
Now, he wrote a letter back in 74, and this is the same handwriting, same style. He has another poem included. The police start to take this stuff very, very seriously. Very seriously. Suddenly, the entirety of Wichita is being urged to lock their doors at night. You know those small towns where it's sort of a given that you can just keep your doors open, you know, trust strangers and whatnot. This is the moment where the police in Wichita say, hey, not anymore. We literally need to... people are now told to check their phones when they enter their houses to make sure that there's a fucking dial
That's
tone
right.
because BTK would cut the phone lines.
Yes.
And maybe this vigilance, this newfound vigilance, is why next episode we are going to be jumping forward such a huge gap in time because it was, from this point on, demonstrably harder for the BTK killer to get away with.
Paul, one of the things I need to stress at this time is my theory for the extreme gap was that he had such a hoard of trophies that he could go into his own mind. We know that he was into some really messed up stuff. He was into autoeroticism, and he was caught by his wife. And that's maybe where we'll leave it. Suffice to say that he's got such a trove of tangible, physical mementos that is going to satisfy and satiate his sexual desires for the next 8 years until next episode.
He can hibernate, basically. So we're going to jump forward in time next episode. But before then, we're going to have a loose ends. At the tail end of this week, happy Easter, everybody. What a fucked story. This is deeply upsetting. We did not intend to spend a whole episode on one victim, but that's just sort of how it panned out. We're trying to take as much time as possible because, honestly, we've sat there and read the court transcripts for the BTK killer, for Dennis Rader, and there's too much there not to go into detail. So enjoy is the wrong word, but find an adjective that you feel appropriate and... we hope you're enjoying, I guess, this in-depth exploration of the BTK killer. Dad and I don't often stray outside the shores of Australia to look at true crime, but when we do, it always ends up being big. We've done the Black Dahlia. We've done, right now, every other... The Lindbergh baby. I mean, we tend to go pretty hard on these overseas cases. So once we wrap up with the BTK killer in a few weeks, we'll be back to Australian true crime. And as mentioned before, Dad, we will be back at the tail end of the week with a brand new episode of Loose Units, Loose Ends. But in the meantime, thank you so much for all the feedback. Feel free to head across to our Facebook discussion group. Don't forget to head across to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you haven't already done it, and I know some of you haven't, I know you're putting it off, leave us a rating and a review. We really appreciate it. Just, you know, click 5 stars and hit send. Super easy. But in the meantime, have a great week, everybody. Stay safe, and we will see you very, very soon for another episode of Loose Units. Bye, everyone.
Cheerio.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.